The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond, and hello and welcome to a very special episode of Podcast Beyond. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and today we are joined by Stig Asmussen from Respawn Entertainment, who is the game director on Star Wars Jedi Survivor and Fallen Order. Welcome, yeah. Stig. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a great opportunity for the team.
We have a lot of burning questions, and of course, I'm joined by Jada Griffin and Josh Du, both of whom played through this massive, awesome, epic game. This is one hell of a sequel. I'm really, really enjoyed it. And obviously, there's a lot of stuff to talk about within the game and things that, you know, maybe you didn't know about if you haven't finished the game. So if you haven't finished the game, close whatever you're watching or listening to on this. Just get run. Go cover your ears, hide, leave, uninstall Spotify or whatever. Just get it. Just go away because we're going to spoil the whole thing. That's the whole point of a spoiler cast. All right, we good? Okay. So, Bo Da Cunha is the big bad. He's the plot twist.
You're jumping in there.
we're getting in the deep end here. We're getting right to it. He's set up as this wonderful kind of charismatic fun guy, and then surprise, it's not Ravis, it's not Dagon Garrett, Dagon Abbott. It's Bode. Was this always the plan? How did this come to be? I want to know sort of how did Bode become a character?
Well, let me ask first. Did you all fall for the twist there, or
I didn't trust him.
You didn't trust him?
I didn't trust him. It seemed too good. Like, it felt like early on Coruscant, I was like, okay, cool, this is cool. And like all the promotional materials is like, hey, this is an ally. So it's really sold me as that. I think what really got me was the second fight with Dagon. And then he starts like just appearing after like Dagon like threw him out and like was doing all these like force things. I was like, how is Bode in here? Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, if he's just a normal dude with a blaster, like, he shouldn't just be appearing randomly. So that was my tip off point. I was like, something bigger is going on with Bode.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when we were playtesting the game, we saw, like, some people saw Bode coming from a mile away. Mm-hmm. And they still liked it because it made them feel smart. And you know, the people that were just floored by it, you know, they loved it as well too. But it's an interesting story. Bode is kind of like the born out of our narrative director, Aaron Contreras. He had this idea of all movies was Point Break.
Okay.
And where you've got kind of this
Bode and Bodhi. Yeah.
Yep, Bode and Bodhi.
there's already a Bodhi in Star Wars. So you had to go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of the genesis for it. And we wanted to have this character that, you know, They have this friendship, this bond, but then just take the player on the ride and learn, you know, this guy's a traitor at the same time that Cal learns it. But yeah, we're, you know, he's a great fight at the end. It's you know, kind of the thing that really really was most of the emotion in the game is kind of born out of that. So yeah, we were really happy with how it turned out.
I think it's...
And Nashir was amazing. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, not at all. No. I think it's interesting because, like, Lucas always talked about, like, Star Wars being, like, poetry and kind of rhyming. And we think of Star Wars sequels and obviously, you know, sequels in general, Empire Strikes Back sets, like, a pretty huge precedent. And I feel like Bode had kind of elements of two twists in Empire, which is, you know, Lando, this, like, charismatic scoundrel who's your pal double-crossing you. But then he's also kind of a subversion of Vader in that he's, you know, Vader is a dark Jedi who you find out is a father. And then with Bode, it's this nice dad dude who turns out to be a dark Jedi. Yep. Was this like a deliberate choice? I guess sort of aside from Point Break, where did his character come from?
Well, I mean, he's the name of the game is Jedi Survivor, but you could almost say it's Survivors.
Mm.
It's you know, you've got Cal, you've got Bode, you've got Seer, and you know, all these people are doing whatever it takes to survive. And you know, Bode's got his own story, he's got his own motivations, but they're all in parallel with Cal as well too. So we thought that would be a good way of kind of like reflecting on Cal's journey and like how he made decisions differently, and he's still able to stay altruistic in the face of this, you know, this incredible you know, dark presence. So that's kind of, you know, something that we were always trying to play with the game, and you know, learning that this guy's a Force user, not just a swashbuckler, very powerful. And somewhere along the way, you know, in his obsession with kind of being the father, you know, Bode literally loses the plot.
Mm. I mean, that in itself is kind of, that's sort of echoing Vader in Revenge of the Sith. It's like that attachment is what is what drives, you know, decisions. Now, you were talking about Survivor sort of, you guys were thinking about Survivor before Fallen Order shipped. Like you kind of had ideas for a sequel going on in your head. What was left? Was there stuff in Fallen Order or that didn't make it into Fallen Order that made it into Survivor? Was there like things that you were like, oh, we got to hold on to this, let's save this for the next one?
In regards to mechanics, absolutely. Like we had never fully fleshed out like the twin stance. It was more of a super in Fallen Order. And we were very close to having it done, but it wasn't ready to come out of the oven yet. But I would say within 6 to 8 weeks after shipping Fallen Order, we had twin stance working in the game.
Wow.
We had conversations about a heavy, had conversations about how much fun would it be to have a blaster. But you know, the Fallen Order, I mean, we got that game. That game was like, you know, we were building the airplane and flying it at the same time. We were just hoping it could land. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, in regards to story, I don't think that there was anything that like, any unfinished business that we had. We're pretty happy where it ended up. But we knew that we wanted to do a time jump when the next game started, because it was part of the intrigue, I think, as a player and as a fan, is just, you know, you're wondering what happened in the crew, what happened during these 5 years, why are they apart from each other? And I think that's something that, like in the early stages of the game, which it might feel like it's kind of slow, but that's very deliberate, because we're trying to, you know, take the player on this ride and like, you know, uncover, turn over the stones and find out what happened to this crew.
I mean, it feels authentically Star Wars-y in that, like, Empire has that going on, where they're, like, making references. I mean, Star Wars starts at episode 4.
Right.
There's always that sense of missing something, and that's what kind of helps it feel like there's this galaxy going on. You know?
Yeah, and no, we didn't know exactly what we were going to do with the second game in regards to story, but when we do work on stories, we think about, okay, what happened before and what happened after the story? Because if we can answer those questions, then it makes everything that's in between feel more legit.
And you brought up the heavy stance earlier. I mean, among all the other stances, but I really want to zero in on that one just because I think a lot of people were just like, why is it heavy? Like, it's a lightsaber, right? Like, what went into the development of like making it seem heavy, even though we all know it's a lightsaber?
Yeah, heavy was a working title, a working name. It was, it's all about having timing windows that are different. We wanted every like stance to have its own personality. And this is one where you had to be more deliberate with each swing. And there's kind of the way that when we were animating it, we weren't thinking of it in terms of it being actually a heavy weapon, but more determined and confident. When Cal makes his strikes, he's committing more than where the other ones, like, at the opposite end of it, it's like twin or staff, you know, he's basically like a human propeller.
Yeah.
And he's just like, the flourishes are just that more fantastic. But, you know, as soon as we got the heavy in the game, I got a smile on my face because it does feel different. We did.
Yeah.
Get a unique personality for it.
Oh, I think I played 90% of the game with Crossguard. Once I got I was just all Crossguard. There was a couple fights where I had to swap to like blaster and dual wield, but I was cross guard all the way. So, and I, cause I like that deliberate gameplay. So you guys definitely succeeded on that. I know you said like propeller with the dual blades, like how much of that was kind of pulled from like, you know, Darth Maul and other dual blade sabers users that we've seen.
That's one of the best things about working on Star Wars is there's so much reference that we can pull from. And whenever we start, you know, we'll do a one page kind of like, or maybe a couple sentences like descriptor of like what we want out of it. And that'll get blown out into like a one page. Mm-hmm. After we've got the one page, which usually is more like 5 to 10 pages. It's at that point during that whole process, we're collecting all these references, YouTube links. And this isn't just coming from one person. It's collectively about everybody. There's the combat designer. There's the animators. There's the leads that are all kind of like feeding into this effort.
And just keep going. I loved all the stances. Mm-hmm. Like the blaster stance, I think, is one also that you guys also kept it pretty under wraps in all the preview stuff.
Yep. Deliberate.
Yeah. And any reason for that?
Because we just didn't want to spoil everything before. We wanted people. It's a really special moment when you get to unwrap that gift.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to like you know. Show all our cards and spoil people. I mean, that's why we mentioned Coruscant, but we didn't mention, you know, why Coruscant, what's happening there at the beginning of the game, because we want people to like, you know, from the very opening moments be like seeing something fresh and that they're enthralled with. And that's something that, you know, most likely, I mean, most games that I've worked on and what I work on in the future, I'm probably not getting give away the beginning of the game,
yeah,
or the end of the game for that matter.
And it's just like such a unique thing in Star Wars as well that somebody's like has a lightsaber and a little pistol. I mean, Bode has it by the end as well. What other things were you thinking about working into that stance? Because like there's ammo, and the way you refill the ammo is you got to hit with the lightsaber. Like, talk about the development of that, because it's never really been done before, I feel like.
Well, I mean, I think the front and center with the blasters is just the fact that you've got this push and pull, like kind of this tug of war that's going on for the player, where they can do the ranged attacks, but then they're forced to go back in to recharge their shots. Mm. And it's kind of it's an elegant dance that you're performing there. And once again, it's something that feels very different than the other stances that we have in the game. And it's something that speaks to the fact that, you know, in these unconventional times, Cal's going to do unconventional things as a Jedi, mm-hmm, to, you know, to survive.
Yeah.
That seems like kind of a big thing these days in Star Wars is the morally gray, you know, because like the earlier stuff is very much very like archetypal. There's good and evil. And now we're getting, I don't know, you're getting stuff like Andor, you're getting stuff like this where it's not, you know, Cal's breaking a lot of Jedi rules. Like he's doing what he has to do to survive. Was that, I guess, did you run into trouble with that? Like, was there kind of a push and pull with the story group allowing like what a Jedi can and can't do? I guess let's talk about Cal a little bit. Let's talk about sort of where he's at and the changes that he undergoes in this game.
Yeah. I mean, you start the game, he's basically, you know, I think Grease calls him like a human lightsaber, you know, like he's just going around trying. He's you know, waiting in the muck, trying to do what he believes are good things, but they're all adding up to nothing because the Empire can't be beaten. So yeah, I mean, you talk about this kind of like morally gray. I mean, I think that we find ourselves there because, like I said, I mean, he's going to do whatever it takes. You never know what's around the corner because he's constantly being hunted. You know, the whole crew's kind of a reflection of that as well. They've all splintered and they're doing their own thing to survive. And I find the story when it is that those shades of gray, I find it much more nuanced and interesting. And you know, as a player, you have to make different sacrifices in the game. And it was just the most important thing to us as a team was do those sacrifices, do they pay off? Do they feel like they're worth it? Do they feel like something that Cal would, he's in the position to do, is this the decision that he would make? So you feel like, you know, you're connected to that as well as the player.
Was there ever a point where Survivor had a morality system?
No.
No? Was that just, what was the reasoning behind that?
This is a Star Wars canon story, and, you know, Cal is a real character in Star Wars, and having that, I don't think there's anything wrong with having that system, but having a character that has a real story that is going to start and end a certain way means that we can't have that level of that degree of flexibility. And it's also something that I think if we, there's so much more that we did in the game. If we tried to explore something like that, even outside of Cal, then we might have kind of lost our focus a little bit on telling, executing. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's parts where it seems like you're almost setting that up. Like if you do certain things, it's going to give you the good ending or the bad ending. Like there's a couple, you know, sort of dialogue choices with the Jedi mind trick. You know, you get the dark force powers and you're like, should I be doing this?
Right.
And like, I was half expecting there to be, oh, there's a good ending and a bad ending. You know, there's something like that. But
well, I mean, you're asking the right questions, though. You're saying, should I be doing this? Mm-hmm. And that's what we wanted you to feel like. if you were hoping for, like, you know, the bad ending or the good ending, I'm sorry that didn't pay off. But like I said, we wanted the game has to end a certain way, you know, for Cal's legacy and his history to be legit.
Maybe I just don't have any morals, because when I got like all the dark powers, I was just like, cool, like I get to tap into this. Like I want to tap into these darker powers. Give me more.
That's one of my favorite moments in the game is that scene with where Cal meets Kata and then Bode barges in on them. And then, you know, like, and, you know, Cal's, you know, already taken on the head of the ISB base and everything. Mm-hmm. It was all that power fantasy when you actually unleash that rage is pretty off the hook.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think having that, and then I'm really glad you guys kept that power as the super, because then I was saving that the Ogdo Bogdo double fight. I was like, I can't. I mean, let me get this out of the way. I hate that frog. Like, I hate that stupid frog.
Just a little bit of trouble there?
Little is maybe, you know, underselling it. But yeah, I found the force tear for the double fight. Yep. And like, I died like immediately. I'm like, I'm not touching this for a while. And then when I got that new super, I was like, maybe I can go do this now. And I, you know, it still took me a few tries, but it was definitely a lot more doable. I don't know. I hate that frog.
That fight was amazing, though. There was we actually, like, days after the game came out, there was a YouTuber, a Twitch streamer, I believe in Poland, that had been playing it for like 36 straight hours. Like, he didn't stop. And like, everybody at work had it like up on their monitor. We were all watching him, and we were sending him messages. You know, we're watching you right now. And it was...
And he was playing the double fight or the
double
first
fight.
One?
Double
fight. Okay, yeah. I mean, I struggled enough with the first one. Like, because in Fallen Order, you can cut the tongue off.
Yes.
Yep. Which makes it like definitely more manageable. But you can't do it with this new one, the spawn. And I was just so pissed.
I mean, you couldn't even do it with the original. When you got the double fight, you couldn't even, regular Ogdo, you couldn't cut his tongue in this one either. Like that, they just
That
mechanic. Yeah, I tried.
Oh my God.
Unless I'm missing something,
A lot of tweaks that went into making both of those feel more punishing than the first games.
That was like part of the 10% where I had to swap off a cross guard because it just was too slow with two Ogdos rushing at me on Grandmaster.
So what, like, difficulty were you on?
Oh, Grandmaster all the way.
Yeah. I was on normal, I think, yeah.
Okay. I was playing on normal mostly, yeah. And then I there were a few parts where I was like, I just want to see what happens next. I want to see the story, so I just put it down to baby mode. Yeah.
I actually did that with Vader. The Vader fight, after a few tries, I was like, I think I'm going to have to dial this down a bit because it was... I mean, I liked his appearance in Fallen Order, but then when he shows up in Survivor, I was like... Oh my God, like, I am scared. Like, every time I went up to fight him, I was like, this is actually a harder boss battle than it was in Fallen Order.
Yeah, it wasn't a boss battle.
Oh, that's right. Like, he was just like, he just shows up. But yeah, actually fighting him, I'm like, oh, now I understand, like, who he is in this universe, like, how feared he is as well. It's awesome.
I had so much issue with Vader. Like, that fight was probably tougher than the Bode fight for me. Like, yeah. I think I had more issue with that.
I mean, and he really throws the book at you.
He really does.
All of them.
Yeah. He throws so many books literally. At me. The fact that I'm like Grandmaster, like, when you get to the later stages and the big ball of books that he throws at you, the archives, like, it was, like, almost a one-hit for me, like, kill. I was like, oh, okay, so let's either, like, be perfect or just die.
He does the pull and the choke.
That was, the pull and the choke. I mean, it's so like canonically Vader.
Yeah.
And it was so frustrating every time because I would like, he'd pull me in and then he'd knock me away and then he'd pull me in and then knock me. I'm like, make up your mind. Like, just tell me what you want. Do you want me close? Do you want me far away? I don't know.
So Vader in the first one was like that was a big surprise. That was definitely something that got kept carefully under wraps. And this time around, it was like still, you know, a surprise, but it's also, we weren't not expecting him, I guess. Like, it's kind of more of a thing. But, you know, you'd already done Vader once. The one that I thought felt like, oh, hell yeah, we get to do this, was the Rancor.
Mm. Right.
That felt like just, like, who got assigned the Rancor? Like, how were people fighting over it? Like, what was it like making such, like, an iconic monster? Because that is a Star Wars boss fight, you know?
Yeah, the Rancor was difficult. Actually, this is something that we wanted to have in the first game. Like, we're talking about things that, like, we didn't make it into the first game, and we wanted to have a Rancor. And it was a big conversation back and forth with Lucasfilm. And with anything, they want to make sure that, like, the story of the game, like, earns it. And that was a conversation that went on until we shipped, and it never got in the game. But we continued the conversation going. We had some of our... We made a rough model. We rigged it, had our combat designers start to sketch out fights. And as the conversation was going on, we had a milestone summit review meeting with Lucasfilm. And we said, hey, check this out. And just seeing it like come to life, I think was enough to kind of sell it. And like, you know, little details that we had in there, like the bone. And it's... The other thing, too, is it's kind of unexpected because of where it happens in the game. It's not part of the main story. You can miss it. There's multiple other encounters later on in the game as well, too. So for such a big feature, this is an example of us trying to, like, you know, have a high-dollar moment that's off the main path.
Yeah, that's immediately... That made me feel like... it reminded me of FromSoft games. There's faith that the players are going to find this thing. And it's such a huge payoff to find it.
And we talk about Ogdo. I mean, like, this was basically Survivor's version of, like... Because Ogdo was early in the game on the first one. So, yeah, I mean, we're really happy with the way it came together.
I mean, the bone thing you mentioned is really funny because I've heard multiple people talking about how they didn't realize that's what you were supposed to do. And I was like, you should check out this great walkthrough video called Return of the Jedi. It tells you exactly what to do. Was that like always part of the plan? Like, you got to throw a bone in his mouth. Like, that's got to be.
I don't remember how that one came up. I just think it was probably the combat design team having fun. And, you know, I actually stumbled upon it one time when I was playing the game. I mean, that's what's so much fun about working on something that's so big and with so many talented people is that there's things that, like, surprise me when I'm playing the game that, like, nobody ever talked to me about or anything like that. And, like, I mean, I think one of my favorites is Rick the Door Technician.
Yes, I was hoping you were going to talk about that.
Yes.
I literally, like, had to put the controller down because I was laughing, crying so hard when Rick the Door Technician came running at me screaming, just...
That's like the inverse of like having the faith that players will find this really cool giant boss, being okay with something that ridiculous being front and center in a AAA game. Like, I was cackling.
I think it's best. That's for me. That is best boss fight of 2023 so far. Like, I just like literally like force grabbed him and held him up. And he was like, what? What's going on? I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And that was one of those moments for me. It's like, I didn't know what was in the game. And, you know, there's that brutal fight that you have like kind of on the base of the hangar that goes on and on and on several waves. You know, what we wanted is we wanted everybody's health bar like to add a sliver. And what we saw in the focus test, and then since the game is shipped, most people got there with like barely any health left. And they see this boss bar come up and they're like, holy hell, what is this? I remember during when we do the focus tests, we actually have a camera on the player as they're playing the game so we can kind of see what their reactions are for different parts. And one of the guys, it was priceless, that... Rick the Door Technician starts coming towards him. And then he goes up and he's kind of runs backwards for a minute. And he's trying to size up what's going on here. And then he goes in and just takes him down with one hit. And the guy, like, we just have a camera right on his face. And he starts cracking up and he falls out of his chair. And then next time we see him, he's just kind of walking around in the space that he was in, just like, you know, just cracking up, and he couldn't believe what he had just experienced. I mean, it's when you can make a game and
Yeah.
Unless it's that kind of response.
That was like the best spoiler because you can't spoil a punchline. Like, right. It's one thing for a plot twist, like, the good guy is a bad guy. Like, we've had that in Star Wars. Like, that's not really that unexpected. But, like, to be like, don't give away this amazing bit. Like, this is so funny. Like, it's a really funny game. Like, it's interesting because it's really dark. Like, that's kind of expected of, like, a Star Wars sequel. But it also has an amazing sense of humor. You've got battle droids, you know, admiring beautiful landscapes.
Yep.
No one will ever pull me off this cliff.
And then if you turn around, there's actually a rainbow over there. I don't know if you noticed that. If you turn and look at what that battle droid was looking at, there's a rainbow and like one of those like R3 icons that Cal will comment. He's like, oh yeah, it is a pretty good view.
Oh my God.
Is there any other, are there any other, there's like NPC like throwaway lines that like sticks out as a favorite for you?
Off the top of my head, and I can't think of anything right now. There's so many of them, but like I do... To your point, yes, there's humor in the game. I think that is part of Star Wars. You know, like, it's part of Star Wars DNA. We have to make sure that we get that right. And it's humor is really difficult to write. And it's a testament to our writing team, like, that we were able to pull it off. And, you know, a lot of it happens in those moments that are, like ambient. You know, you're not expecting it. It's not a moment like, oh, here's a cutscene. I'm going to sit down and focus. It's just kind of like, you know, we have to bring a little bit of... The game can't always be dark. You have to have a little, like, moments of levity to kind of like, so when the dark parts happen, they really you feel that contrast and it sets in. So it's that we can be light like that, I think, is it's fun. It's the bottom line. It's fun, and it's nice, you know, on our Slack channel at work, like, people finding things and posting videos there's thousands and thousands of lines, and like everybody's experiencing something a little bit different and you know, we were talking about earlier, it's like, I don't know everything that's in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm the director, because it's massive.
There's so much stuff.
Is there anything special on Kobo when you're going to the area, you're going through the forest area with your Neko and stuff, and there's that one stormtrooper just sitting down on that, like, perch going on? I tried messing with him. I tried doing something. I tried ignoring him. I couldn't figure out, is there anything special with that stormtrooper, or is he just on break?
He's on break, and he's there for you to just like decide, hey, am I going to like leave him peacefully, or am I going to force push him off? Am I going to stab him in the back? And it's end of the day, he's a bad guy. So if you decide to go in for the kill, then you shouldn't feel bad about it, because you would have tried to kill Cal.
Yeah, there are a lot of like fun moments like that in this game for me, but I think the most fun I had was, I mean, that huge sequence on Jedha, right? The
Trident?
We
call it the Trident moment.
The Trident moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
With a huge ship.
Yeah. All the portals and stuff. Like, oh my God, like, what a sequence. Like, how did you guys like even think about having these, I don't know, all this teleportation and whatnot going on?
Well, that's one of... So we wanted Marin to have a special move that we'd never seen before, that makes you wonder how many other tricks does she have. And, for that, it's almost like she's kind of the conductor of the orchestra of the winds. And, we've got this secret weapon designer named Robert Bloss, who is really good at these action sequences. He did the in Jedi Fallen Order, he did the sequence with the Ninth Sister where she's chasing Cal in her ship, like as he's going like through like crazy slides on Sheik.
Right.
And it's like, you know, let's give it to Bloss. Bloss also worked on the speeder bike sequence as well too. And go to town on this, come up with something that's crazy. And it was one of those sections that's it's risky for us as a team, because we're like, you really have to have faith that when all the pieces come together, it lands right.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was in kind of like what we would call gray box mode for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to kind of like, for literally a couple of years, rally the team to continue pushing through on this one, because, it's are we going too far with this one? But once all those pieces were there, once it's starts with the kiss, they team up together, they take the Trident down. It's amazing. And we actually, even when it was in gray box, when we were focus testing the game, we saw it was continuously getting really good scores.
Yeah.
And that's without any context of like what's happening, like in regards to the magic and the moment, like the kiss. And
yeah. And you said, like, you're afraid of going too far. What is, like, too far for a sequence like this?
I mean,
pulling a Star Destroyer out of the sky, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's there's a fine line, like when it starts to feel like Cal is flying and you start to question things, but it's all grounded in this magic that Marin's created, yeah. And it's intermixed with all these Jedi powers that you've learned over the course of the game. So if you look at it in a vacuum, and you haven't played the game for, you know, what is it, 12 hours up to that point, it might feel like you've gone too far. Mm. But you know, you've learned all these different powers leading up to that, and I feel it's definitely earned.
Yeah, it feels really satisfying, like having just learned all these abilities and getting a little like time to practice them, especially like that air dodge, which is just so satisfying. But even more satisfying is just chaining all those things together in this like massive sequence. And all these other things are going on, but like as a player, you feel really good. Just like, oh yeah, I can do this wall run here and then jump and then dash and then go into that portal. Like it was awesome.
And the thing is, I love to hear that. Yeah. I think part of that is that we don't want it to be difficult. We don't want it to be something that's like a major skill check.
Yeah.
Not people to get through there. Like most people to get through there, their first or second try. And that's not always an easy thing to do when you're talking about platforming. But it does kind of guide you, and it gives you the tells, so that I feel like most people had the enjoyment of getting through like the first or second try.
So like, is that why we had like those tears that had the like more difficult platforming trials? Yep. Those were for the tryhards, the people who want to like are masochistic, maybe like I want to get through this, like this is fun. I love the platforming, those sections, those little tears, those were great. I love those kind of, it made me a better player because I was able to like, I was like, oh, I can use this platform to get this. And then I found myself like using some of those tricks in some of the later stages to be able to platform to things quicker than maybe the laid out pathway because of those.
Yeah, that's what they're there for. I mean, it's a space not only for Cal to train, but for you to train as well too. And it's us putting value into things that are off the main path for those, rewarding people for, you know, that explore those. Same with the meditation, like kind of like puzzle rooms that we have and everything. Like it's all opt-in. Like if you want to do it, you can do it. If you want to check out, you can check out. But it was really important that we give the player that type of freedom.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
What was your guys' kind of like philosophy going into those like the Jedi temples that we're kind of like diving into and solving all those puzzles? Because, you know, Zelda came out like years ago, Breath of the Wild had all these shrines with all these really cool intricate puzzles. And then, you know, Fallen Order didn't really have that to my memory, if I don't remember.
We had not opt-in ones. We had like when you learn the Force, we had a lot of puzzles in the game. And, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say that like that we definitely draw inspiration from Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of cool mechanics in the game. We have some really talented level designers that like doing creating puzzles. You know, it's kind of like they have like this toy box of different mechanics that they can use to create these intricate designs. And again, it's all about creating these challenges for those who want to take part in it. We had kind of a clever wrapper that these like were old like High Republic, mm-hmm. like kind of training centers. Like we called it like this is kind of like their NASA pilot training facilities type thing.
I love that.
Now I want to touch on the High Republic stuff. Specifically, I'm interested in sort of how game mechanics and lore that already exists interact, because Ravus specifically fascinates me because he's a Gendai. He's got the regenerative arms and stuff, which makes him a really good boss fight mechanically, but he also is a species that can live hundreds of years, so he can have this overlap with the High Republic. So that honestly, what he is serves the mechanics and the narrative. Which came first there? How did that come about? Like, was he suggested by story group? Was this like someone in Respawn coming across, you know, Dirge?
I can't remember. I don't remember if that was whether it was a combat designer came up with the idea and then story jumped on board, or if it was the other way around. I do know that we wanted to have this this very kind of regal character that was from this 200 years before, kind of the still following kind of like this old, very noble path. He's basically immortal, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just looking like his entire life has been about, you know, finding the ultimate fight. And eventually he knows that's going to lead to his downfall. But he does, it happens in a very, like I said, noble way. And I think that's, you know, following that thread through is very satisfying for the player. And it's an interesting trip, and the type of villain he is not something that you can just kind of like see everywhere. So yeah.
Now, complete opposite end of the spectrum, let's talk about Turgle. So he's kind of a surprise dark horse fan favorite. How does the team observe Turgle Tuesday in Turgley?
It's, you know, when you work on a game, you never know what are the things that people are going to latch onto. And Turgle, like the team loved Turgle. I think Richard Horvitz, the actor, did a fine job with him. But it's like once it goes live, once it's out in the wild and seeing people's reaction with that, it confirms and validated. Oh, man, my chair. it confirmed and validated, a lot of the feelings that we had on the team. It was not just Turtle. I think the other one that's like
Scuba Stev.
Scuba Stev.
And they, yeah, again, JB Blanc was awesome. And there's sure to be new adventures for Turtle.
Oh,
glad to hear it.
Ooh, Turgle's coming back.
Turgle will return. Yeah,
I hope so.
Little Turgle. Do you have any other like sort of funny anecdotes from development? Anything? I mean, you talked about the guy falling out of his chair. Is there any sort of stuff like that that happens behind the scenes?
This project was different than anything else that I worked on before, and like we're in this world now where we're working remotely, so you know those kind of like improv moments don't happen the same way as they used to. And there's so many different moments. We actually just created, just internally, we created a, like kind of a, like one of the producers on the team was collecting kind of like bloopers the entire project, and he turned it into this really well-made blooper reel that we just shared with the team a couple weeks ago as like, it's in honor of the fact that we shipped the game. And it's not something that we're ever going to go wide with. I mean, that's the kind of, it's all kind of your question is all kind of encapsulated in one space. And the crazy things that happen during development often happen in a live game.
So Matt Martin from the story group at Lucasfilm tweeted out something I thought was really funny. It was talking about how, the hidden path, the sort of Jedi, you know, secret, you know, underground thing the Jedi are using, which was talked about in the Obi-Wan series. Yep. That was so tightly under wraps that when Survivor was, you know, doing mocap performances, the actors were shooting, they had to use the placeholder term Muni Metro when talking about the hidden path, which is the San Francisco bus system for anyone unfamiliar. Was there any other like just weird working title stuff like that, or any kind of things you had to keep top secret or play close to the chest that you are allowed to talk about at all?
I think that's probably the biggest example of something that we had. Whenever we're doing casting, we have to create kind of like what we would call, it's a fake script, essentially. Mm. And so people don't even know what they're casting for. Mm. So that's an example of like, you know, 100% of what they're reading for is, I mean, I think some people can figure it out. On the first game, they certainly couldn't because they didn't even know that it existed. But yeah, just terms, like working terms, like I'm terrible with names in general. And when you work on something for 3+ years and you're using like working titles the entire time, like people will ask me questions about the game and they'll bring up a character. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. Because the names actually don't get in the game and get approved until like, months before
show. Right. Did Survivor have a code name, like a working title internally?
Yeah, it was Applejack.
Nice.
Jack.
Any reason? You just like Applejacks, or?
It's just a fun name.
Yeah. it's a nice word to say. Yeah. Applejack. It's great.
Now, talking about sort of actors and the whole performance angle of it, Cameron Monaghan did an amazing job as Cal yet again. A lot of people I talked to were like more into him this time around. I feel like he's really kind of taken a shine of the role. He's really kind of attached himself to Cal.
Yep.
Was there anything in the sort of in the story here that had him going like, I don't know if I would do that, or like, hell yeah, this is totally Cal?
So a lot of what, I mean, most of what Cal is in the game is what Cam brings to Cal's character. Mm-hmm. And he really tries to, like, he reads the script and he really tries to wrap his head around like the meaning of each scene and how, Cal would portray himself based on the character that he's been performing for so many years now. And it's constantly, he's always constantly questioning on the stage, not only what Cam or Cal would be doing in a situation, but maybe, you know, the other people that are within the scene as well. So he's almost like a director on the stage. Mm. I think it's safe to say.
Were there any moments in Survivor that he improvised and made it into the game?
The last, actually probably the most important moment in the game where he fires two shots.
Mm. Yeah.
That was his idea to do the second shot.
Oh.
I mean, that moment for me was really interesting just because, I mean, going into the decision to kill Bode, I think, like, he is disarmed at that point. Like, his blaster doesn't work anymore. And Cal still goes for, like, yeah, not only one shot, but two. Can you talk about that? Like, just actually going through with killing Bode, even though it would be killing the father of this girl that he obviously, like, cares for now.
He's a monster, though. Bode became a monster, and he, like I said earlier, he completely had lost the plot, and it took that moment. I mean, he would have killed Cal. If that shot fired from his blaster, Cal would be dead, Cal can't take that risk.
Yeah.
So that's why he did it with, like, extreme prejudice. He goes in for that second shot, and there's that stare between that moment between him and Marin as well too. It's like they're kind of in this together, and he got validation from her. It's like, yeah, that's what you should do.
And I got some, like, I had conversations with other people about this game and they had different interpretations. What do you think Kata's whole perception of the incident is? Like, does she think her dad became a monster? Does she hold some sort of, you know, grudge against Cal for doing this?
I think it's a really good question. I think that I would like to know the answer to that question at some point. But it's designed the way it is for you to ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's up for your own interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, she's with the crew now, I guess. And so, I mean, I'm very interested to see what kind of tensions will arise maybe as a result of that. Maybe in another time jump and we'll see, like, how she has changed. But yeah, I just wanted to pick your brain a little on that.
Speaking of somebody who's very handy with a blaster, there is a nice fun cameo at the end of one of the big side quests. How did that kind of come into action? How did we go to getting Boba Fett in Jedi Survivor? Because I know that's got to be like a lot of, like, you got to get a lot of sign-offs on that to get something like that.
Yeah, it's a big deal, no doubt about it. And that's the whole point, is like, we, for the player that went down and completed that quest, we wanted to have like a really satisfying, unexpected, I mean, almost like a Vader moment in the first game that you're talking to.
I didn't expect it at all. I was like, what? I spent probably a good 30 minutes in photo mode taking pictures with my buddy Boba Fett.
I didn't finish that side quest. Yeah. I should probably go back and
it's
do that.
Pretty dope,
so we just spoiled it for you?
Yeah.
Welcome to the spoiler cast, Max.
I know what Boba Fett looks like. A couple action figures of him. Now, I wanted to talk about the kind of the customization. You had like a bunch of really cool... I feel like there were some very subtle nods in there to like previous Star Wars games. Like, you could have the pauldron, like Kyle Katarn. Yep. You could have like... There's an Outrider armor set, which feels like a very much Dash Rendar kind of nod. It was all very tasteful. Like, none of it felt like, you know, just a completely wacky character that wasn't in place. Even the sort of nods to like Luke and Obi-Wan were like kind of retooled to fit Cal's whole aesthetic.
Yep.
Were there any sort of suggestions or, you know, ideas that got pitched that just didn't work? Like, either they were too out there, they were kind of too on the nose.
Well, it's funny that you asked that, because one of the ones that I originally thought we're going too far with was the mullet. And I'm like, come on. Like, it's like he looks ridiculous with this thing.
Yeah.
But everybody loved it. It was one of those ones. I mean, I'm not going to argue with like playtesting and like, you know, what people think when it's they're playing something and like you get a really good response. It's like, okay, I was wrong.
People love the mullet. But
yeah.
Love the mullet. And the funny thing is, I was converted. I like it now as well.
So. It feels very like in universe in a way. It's like the original Star Wars was, you know, from the 70s and like going into the 80s and like, yeah, people like looked like that, especially like action heroes, right? Like I started to build my whole character as like an 80s action hero, especially with the these bright outfits, like even with the cape, but the mullet was always there. I always had that.
Yeah, and the one of the things, like, hair is a big deal to us. I don't have any hair, but it's like it's always been a really big thing since the first game. It's like, we've got to have hair that's got volume in it, and it, like, Cal can put his fingers through it and it blows in the wind, and then we're like, well, we're gonna have, you know, a dozen different haircuts for this game. How are we going to make that work?
Yeah.
And we came up, our animation team came up with a really good solve that was all physics based, and it ended up getting good results. But there were some hilarious, hysterical moments, like while we were developing, where his hair would just do the wackiest stuff.
I got to ask, you have so many cool options customization wise, but you can't change the color of his hair. And with all due respect to Gingers, why is he always like, you can change the color of your droid, your lightsaber, you know, you could customize the spaceship in the last, but you could all sorts of major things, but you can't dye your hair. What's up with that?
His hair is sacred. Like I said, hair is a really big deal to our team. That's the thing that's most iconic about him. And I think that, like, whenever somebody sees Cal, they can't mistake him for somebody else. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's ginger. And, it's that was deliberate. But to your point, though, you can do some crazy color stuff in the game that, like, can get kind of cringy. And like the way that you can color the lightsaber and the blasters.
Oh, I was changing my saber, BD1, and Cal's clothing and hair probably every 30 minutes of the game. My partner was working downstairs. He'd come up and seeing me play, and he'd be like, "You're wearing a different outfit like than you were 20 minutes ago." I'm like, "There's so many options. Like, I'm having fun. Let me just dress up Cal." Like,
yeah.
It feels like a direct response to the complaint about the ponchos in the last one. And then there was a poncho in here, but it's like, it's kind of off the beaten path.
Buried, yeah.
I wore my poncho in pink.
That was the reward for the spawn fight, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I mean, we almost didn't have any ponchos in the first game. It was, or just the beginning one. It was like, remember I said, you know, we were flying the airplane building at the same time. That was one of the things that came in really late. It's like, we finally got the game connected and we're playing through it. It's like, this is cool, but like, I'm not getting anything when I'm playing the game. And so we wanted to have some rewards for the player. And then we had like a brainstorming session, and that's where we came up with customizable lightsabers, BD skins, Mantis, and, you know, we can do poncho skins, but it was all really late. So we didn't have the, you know, bandwidth to do something that was like as high dollar as what we ended up with in the sequel. But I guess that's another one of those things we knew coming out of Fallen Order, that we were going to double down on customization. And we felt like we nailed it with the lightsaber customization in the first game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So kind of our guiding light was, let's give everything the lightsaber treatment. Yeah. And that's where you get these costumes that they're really high quality.
Have we thought about adding fancy hats to the next one?
It would fall off. So he's jumping around.
You just go pick it back up. Force power, pull it right back.
I don't buy that.
So we actually considered helmets in this game.
Oh.
And we had it like some helmets, like we had like real-time voice modulation. So some helmets would change his voice. Oh. We had that working. The problem with the helmets was, there were so many problems with how they would screw up the performance and very like kind of touching and emotional scenes. And it's kind of, you know, you've got some haircuts in there that are kind of ridiculous, but the scene still works. Like, how do we do the kiss if he's wearing a helmet?
Right.
You know, like, so it was a debate that just went back and forth and back and forth. And ultimately I just said, we got to cut helmets. Like, we're not going to be able to ship with them.
So,
doesn't mean the helmet conversation, you know, I was gonna say.
So that means we might have a chance at seeing it for future playthroughs. Because I would love to go back through and have just voice modulation for a bunch of the cutscenes and just
eyesight will return in time.
Just extra ridiculousness. That's what I love in my follow playthroughs. Like,
now we should ask about what's next. You're not going to give us a straight answer because that's not how things work. You alluded to thinking in terms of trilogies, which doesn't officially mean that there is another game coming out, but
this one sold a couple copies.
You have two games under your belt that did pretty well. I could, you know, see that happening. Do you have an idea in your head for what the next one looks like, or is it, I guess, how collaborative is it? Like, is it, do you have like sort of this is the next one, this is the story, and then everyone kind of like workshops that, or is it just the entire team comes together and just works on a pitch? Like, what, I guess, how did, Where does the Star Wars Jedi game come from?
Yeah, just to qualify, I think about not just Star Wars, just games in general as trilogies. It's the and you know, Star Wars, I owe a lot to Star Wars because of that. Like, you know, they kind of drilling that into me since I was a little kid. But you know, we're still supporting Survivor right now. The team is out. Like, most of the team's on. Like, they had a lot of leftover PTO that they want to burn, or we had, you know, comp time at the end of the project, you know, for like all the people that were doing overtime. So don't have like a group together to start really crafting what's next of anything. And like I said, we're still supporting Survivor right now, and that's kind of where our focus is. But yeah, I'd like to, whatever we're kind of hashing out a new game, there's a, you know, usually begins with design and writing. And, you know, then we start to, once we have something that's like, can be easily described, that's when we start to, you know, have conversations with the greater team. And of course, in those early stages, we're involving Lucasfilm, and, you know, that's always a really good collaboration. And oftentimes we can find out opportunities that we didn't even know existed.
I mean, you definitely set up a lot of pieces that could go in many directions. You know, you've got a Padawan who could be the whole new character. You've established, you know, characters in the High Republic era. A lot of directions to go. We are running out of time here, but I have one last very serious question. This is the second canonical appearance of a toilet or a fresher in Star Wars after The Mandalorian, and you really have one hell of one. How does it work? Because it's got...
You're not going to ask me this, are you?
It's got... There's like an exhaust pipe on the side. There's like a little hole in the bottom. There's a thing in the back.
I think it's... Take your pick.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, like, when you're designing a toilet for... a world where there's so many different types of people, creatures, yeah. And different, you know, ways that they could excrete things. How did you we got to make something that looks like a normal toilet, but Star Wars-y?
Yeah, I think the artists had a lot of fun with that one.
were there things, I mean, were there ones that you rejected and were like, no, this is too
far? That was one of the things that, like, first time I saw it was live in the game.
Oh, really?
I was like...
And that was the one.
And I didn't even know about the pickup that was there either. So, like, that was another one of those moments that was really funny for me. Kind of like a, like, you know, like, we got a good group of people with sense of humor.
It's a nice toilet, you know? It came out well.
So we need to bring on the person who designed the toilet then to ask them the specific questions.
That's
the
deal.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That's our next spoiler cast. Stig, thank you so much for coming by and hanging out. And also, thank you for making a phenomenal Star Wars game. We had a ton of fun with that.
Thanks for playing it. And great conversation today.
Yeah. Anyway, dying to see what you do next. Thank you to everyone for watching and listening at home and beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.